Namaste. So today's reflection continues in the series of karma. And as we have seen, man thinks he is free, but he is bound. We may almost say paradoxically, when he thinks he is most free, he is most bound. Because we think, because we can think, therefore we are free. But thoughts come to us, we have no control over them. All kinds of thoughts, good thoughts, bad thoughts, at least that is how we categorize them. Positive thoughts, negative thoughts. But as long as we are living in this duality, we cannot really have any kind of mastery. So, as long as we are bound in this circle of nature, there is no real freedom. And yet, as we saw last time, yet there is a sense of freedom given to man. And even if we read all the scriptures on the world which will tell us that there is no real free will, yet this delusion is important. It is part of nature's planning. It is given to man, this feeling of freedom, and we have to exercise it because this is the means given to us. So the feeling of freedom is an instrument given by nature for our own evolution and mastery, and therefore we must exercise it. It's like somebody who has, you know, created a picture on the wall and it's not very pleasant, but gently left a pencil and a rubber. So the same person has done it. So we can either look at the picture and say it's a horrible picture, oh it is so ugly, close our eyes, or we can pick up the pencil and rubber, and even though we don't know how to make a sketch, we can try doing something. So with that effort we grow, and eventually one day we can make a beautiful picture, at least definitely a more beautiful picture than the one which we are given. So this is the whole idea of Purusharth. Purusharth means that we can change whatever we have received, and we can change the future, we can change the present. So we should focus on that. So what should be our first step? Normally we keep getting tied between, and this is the problem with law of karma, it is moves between good and bad and reward and punishment. So what happens, for the sake of reward in some heaven beyond or another life, we start doing good deeds, if at all. First of all, it's not so simple as that. And at the same time, when we do a good deed with the idea of reward, then it's no more a good deed. It's business, it's calculation. So from the law of attitudes, we see that it's a regression. Good deed must be something spontaneously arising out of nature. And that happens when nature has upgraded from rajas to tamas. So the same deed done in a rajasic state for some reward, whether this worldly, otherworldly, in some heaven beyond, or in next life, is a rajogun utpanna deed, and it doesn't bear beautiful results. It bears sukh and dukh, joy and sorrow, as we spoke last time according to the Gita. But the same deed done more impersonally, in a desireless manner, unselfishly, as an offering, act of offering, according to the Shastras as it is said, which means with a due consideration of time, space and person, then that deed makes us grow towards a better consciousness. And yet reward and punishment should be out, good and bad, and especially good for reward, that should be out. So what should be the direction of our efforts? And frankly, we cannot do good deed just because we know it is good deed. That's the prayer of Duryodhana, that I know what is dharma, but I have no pravarti for it. I know what is adharma, but I have no nivritti for it. Had Duryodhana been blessed to hear the Gita, which he couldn't because of his ego boastfulness, standing there he was just counting his army and the other army, instead of really probably rushing and saying that, oh Lord, what you are saying to Arjuna, can I also hear these nectar words? Maybe it will help me in my life. But he did not. See, this is the other aspect of Gita, that it was being given on the open field. Anybody could have come and heard. This is the beauty of this. That is, we can look upon Gita as a scripture, which was the last effort of Shri Krishna to stop the battle. He is telling Arjuna, obviously he could not pick up a loudspeaker and start shouting to everybody, but it was a last effort, that what he is revealing, if only everybody could hear, the war would have stopped. It was the last bit of testament that, look, have no hatred inside, have no, rise above these feelings. Even though he is asking Arjuna to fight the great battle, he is insisting on dharma, he is insisting on a state of inner peace, equanimity, freedom from hatred, freedom from grief, and then to fight the battle, remembering the divine always, as a sacred act, as a worship, as an offering. The whole thing would have changed. But nevertheless, this is the human state, that we read something, that we must do good things, but we are unable to do, then we turn it into something much worse, that is feeling guilty or else feeling weak, or else we say that, well, I know what is good but I cannot do it. It is nothing but a kind of ill will, as the mother says, an insincerity, and therefore it doesn't help us. So what should be the direction of our effort? Many people similarly know that we should think positive but are unable to think positive. So we should start from what is given to us as the first instrument for our freedom. And that instrument is called in the yoga as buddhi. We see in the Gita, Sri Krishna himself speaks of the yoga of the intelligent will. You know, usually he takes it from the Sankhya. But there is something called as buddhi. Buddhi is not reason, but we can start with that imperfect translation that there is given to us something called as reason. But the buddhi is a discerning intelligence. And it is given to man. Now, it is bound right now by nature. What is meant by that is we use reason to justify all our lower impulses. We get angry and we justify it. Naturally, if he says something to me, I will get angry. Or, well, I am angry, I don't have any control over it. Or, well, it's my nature, etc., etc. 100 justifications. And so on with all kinds of things, like medieval ascetics who blamed it on women because of their own lustful impulses. And what was the method they used? Ban the woman. That is absurd. That means you are still carrying the lust. You have to master it. And you have to master it by awakening your buddhi, by releasing it from the subjection to nature. So while it is more difficult, though every part can be taken out, but if we read the Gita and Sri Aurobindo, the one part which can be released from the grip of lower nature by effort from within lower nature, it is buddhi. Buddhi is the reflective intelligence, the discerning intelligence. And what we have to do is, usually it is turned outward and downward. Means it is engaged all the time with either the news channels, newspapers, or downward about food, about our basic comfort. And therefore it is, because it is turned outward and downward, therefore it remains a slave. And whenever it comes into action, it's used only to justify our preconceived ideas, which are put into our head as a slave of nature. Whatever nature puts into our head, we accept it. Whatever the media tells us, depending upon our inclination, we accept it and we just live by that. But to disengage the buddhi from the grip of nature is the very first task of the yogin. Sri Aurobindo speaks about it in Synthesis of Yoga, even in the yoga of self-perfection. And how to do it? One thing is to stop justifying all that, you know, we are all full of bundle of weaknesses, negativity, depression waves can come to us. We are all capable of anger. To see that there is not a single fault which is in others, which is not in us. You know, Kabir Das says so beautifully, "Bura jo dekhan mein chala, mujhse bura na koi." When I began to see fault in others, I discovered that all of us have that fault one way or the other. The mother says, world is a mirror. What we have within, that we see outside. So to, instead of justifying constantly our tendencies, good or bad, or we take a lot of puffed up pride for what others call as good, we should know that if there is any good, it is the grace. And if there are certain defects of nature in me, in others, they are universal in nature, but they should not be justified. So first step is to disengage the mind and the reason, the buddhi especially, from this subjection to lower nature, and then turn it upwards and inwards. Meaning thereby it should be used, its energies, the intelligence must be used to discover the eternal truths of existence. Is there a thing like eternal law? Many people automatically use buddhi to say, oh, this is rubbish, there is no God, we don't know, we have not seen. This is very crude reasoning. Because I have not seen, therefore it doesn't exist. Then virus doesn't exist, the most unseen entity going around. So people will say, no, there are effects. Well, there are effects of coming in contact with the divine consciousness also. So from effects we can know. Similarly, people will say, no, some scientists in the laboratories have seen the virus. So too scientists of the spirit have seen God. But crude mind will say, no, there is no God because nobody has seen. Nobody has not seen, it's not true. There are people who have seen, and we too can see, we too can experience the contact if we fulfill the conditions. So this buddhi must move in that direction to know the divine by the very fact that it strives to know the divine. That's why swadhyaya, satsang are such powerful tools to develop positivity. See, we use all kinds of means. There are a lot of courses, paid courses on how to develop positivity, etc. But a simple method is swadhyaya and satsang. So what really is swadhyaya and satsang? Both read books like books of Sri Aurobindo, the mother, Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa's gospel, countless others. India is remarkably full of these. Ramayana, Mahabharata, the Gita. And we'll see spontaneously the buddhi is taking interest. By this interest itself, it begins to turn upward and inward. After reading for some time, we begin to seek that, okay, I have read it. Now I want to have the experience of it. Really speaking, even though I understand intellectually, I must know it just as I know this very body. So when the buddhi is thus turned inward and upward, it begins to separate itself from nature. That doesn't mean that nature's problems go away. They are there, but we know that we stop justifying it, we stop sanctioning it, we know that it should not be there, and therefore slowly the momentum with which nature was running begins to slow down. It's like the driver who has stopped giving acceleration. You see, when you have to stop the car, so one is pick up your feet from the accelerator, car or scooter, anything. And second is you apply the brakes. This is the double process. So when the buddhi separates, it doesn't indulge into those activities again and again, even though they will come for some time, they will carry the nature, as Sri Krishna says, that even the mind of the sage can be carried away for some time. But after a while, it disengages and is no more carried away. Even if it is carried away in thought or speech momentarily, one can pull it back and once again enter into that state of sthit pragya. And that brings peace inside, that brings a relative mastery to observe the thoughts, feelings by disengaging the buddhi, to know things as they are. We start our life by believing, I am the only person, best person, I do everything right, the world is bad towards me. Or my caste, my people, my surname, my family, my religion, that is the ultimate. All others are stupid. Now this is the most stupid thought actually, but we think it is very wise. Now when the buddhi disengages and looks at that, look, all human beings all over the world are made of all kinds. You find good people in every religion, bad people in every religion. Maybe some are more somewhere, some are less somewhere, because they are, again, when we look behind, we see more than their own fault, because human beings are the same. They are brainwashed people. And if only they could, you know, get rid of that, they would be very beautiful people, because there is a divine presence and the divine nature in everyone. Nobody is exempt, but people have been caught up in a mesh of darkness. So we look at things more correctly rather than beginning to hate people or hate human beings. We'll understand the cause of their misery and maybe pray, ask for compassion, if necessary, resist evil and falsehood, but without losing sight of the fact that within even Duryodhana and Ravana, there dwells the divine presence. So this disengaging the buddhi helps a lot to have mastery over thoughts and feelings and over nature. It gets rid of all this thing. Once we do that, there is a reasonable point of control. Then we can begin to turn inwards. And this inward, the second step towards freedom should be in finding the soul. Because buddhi, even when it disengages itself, still it is some part of the mind. Though it is freed from the intense clutch of the lower nature, still by itself, this witnessing by the buddhi is not enough. We have to find a part which is truly out of the world, as they say, which is not constituted of nature. Buddhi is still constituted of nature. Therefore, it does in some way or the other maintain its old slavery. It's like people who are grateful toward their old master, even when they have turned to new masters, they remember the old master, and sometimes they may end up habitually obeying the old master. So we should find within us some part which is not constituted of nature, in fact, from which all nature flows, which is the natural master, the higher apparent, and that part, the divine part in us, is the spark of God, the psychic essence. Now, while all these three parts of nature, the physical body, the life impulsion, the mental nature, they are all constituted by lower nature. But the psychic is that part which is descended from Ananda. It, even though it identifies with mind and life and body, still its very nature, it is para prakriti, which becomes jiva bhuta. It is a child of the mother. In fact, very beautifully in Savitri, it is said that, but since she knows the toil of mind and body and life, she is the divine mother, she puts forth a small portion of herself, a being no bigger than the thumb of man, to face the pang and to forget the bliss. So it is put forth. It is the divinity easily accessible to us. Only we must put our energies in that direction. So instead of trying to be, let's be positive, let's think good, let's first disengage the buddhi, then let's try to come in contact with the soul. When we come in contact with the soul, and that's a whole journey about which we'll speak maybe some other time, but once we start going inward, its seat is within the depths of the heart, and there are various ways, but at least we must concentrate in the heart every day for some time with a will to come in contact with the psychic being. Of course, the shortest way is bhakti, surrender, faith, devotion to the divine. That is the best way to come out of this whole network. That is how we see that in many of these Vishishtadvaita and many of these schools of thought, that by worship alone man can attain freedom. It's a very short and swift path, but we can do it in other ways depending upon the predilection. But if we can take that, then it's the fastest way to enter into a state of freedom, because ultimately the only freedom that we can ever experience is freedom of union with the divine will, because there can be no freedom which will eventually be allowed to act unbridled, which is opposed to the divine will, because it will create a lot of chaos in this universe. And because we run at cross purposes to this all will, therefore we create reasonable chaos. But it is allowed. It is allowed because it breaks the formation, allows new things to develop. But to be aligned to the divine will, to unite with the divine consciousness, to become a part and parcel of the divine mother, to become one with the divine, this is the only ultimate true freedom given to man. And for that, the simplest and the best path is bhakti, devotion, surrender, faith. At the same time, when we do satsang, read these books, beautiful books, which are filled with spiritual consciousness, and we learn to separate ourselves from the movement of nature, not to justify it, but look upon these as processes of nature on which we must work, then slowly, with this double effort of disengaging the buddhi and turning inwards to find the psychic being, we eventually become fundamentally free from nature. It doesn't mean nature will change if somebody immediately, but the grip of the ego and desire will become far less. So if one is looking for defects, one will still see in the outer nature some defect or the other, because nature doesn't get transformed just by discovering the psychic. But we will know at least that I am not this. In Gyan Yoga it is done this way. One disengages by saying, I am not this, I am not this, I am not this. Neti, neti, neti. Till when one is experiencing trouble, disturbance and all kinds of grief and pain, one separates and says, I am not this troubled creature writhing in the mud and with tormented by the storms of passion inwardly or outer life, by hate and lust and greed, and one separates. But in bhakti yoga we do it by turning toward the divine beloved, before whom all these things naturally fade away. By karma yoga, we do the same thing by not working for any selfish motive, but desirelessly, egolessly, by working, doing our works only for the sake of pleasing the divine as his service, as an offering to him. So by whatever means, we must discover the soul. Without discovering the soul, we can try the yoga of intelligent will. To an extent, it will help us. But without even doing that, there is no way we can truly discover freedom. We live in an illusion of freedom and find, illusion. We love to live in illusions. We think it is free thought. This thought which has come from the Western thought that we are all free to think and free thinking. There is no free thinking. We are only slaves of nature. The Eastern thought says that there is no freedom unless we realize the divine essence within us by whatever means. In Western thought, free thought in its own right is an end point. That's how democracies flourish. In Indian thought, it's we are not free till we have discovered the divine. So yoga and dharma are the means to discover the freedom of our being. So with that, we can reflect upon this until we meet next time. Thank you. Namaste.